This is Michael Johnson, and we're here in another of our series of podcasts with F5 Networks. And today we're going to be talking about something we've brought up in the past. We're going to expand on a little bit. And this has to do with dynamic caching. And here to talk with us from F5 Networks is Saxon Amdahl, who is an architect at F5. Welcome to the podcast, Saxon.
Hi.
So tell me a little bit about dynamic caching. What is it, and how does it differ from static caching?
Sure. So what dynamic caching is it's the ability to cache dynamically generated objects or pages that are being served by a web application. Much in the same way that static caching works, a request would be issued by a browser or another system to the server, and a cache that sits between the browser, the requesting system, and the application actually intercepts that request and generates a response and delivers it back to the browser. What makes this different from static caching is really the amount of technology that's involved in being able to deliver an accurate response back to the requester. Static caches really only need to support a very sort of limited number of rules to be able to accurately respond to the requesting system, mainly because what they're responding with are static files, things like images and JavaScript files. For applications, there's actually a very large number of other requirements that the system has to be able to fulfill in order to deliver an accurate response back to the original requester.
So what kind of scalability gains do you typically see when you engage dynamic caching?
Well, an advanced dynamic caching system can really get hit ratios in the 60 to 80% range, which, you know, admittedly is lower than a static cache, which might see, you know, 99%+ cache hit ratios. But when it comes to the amount of CPU load that's being saved, a dynamic cache actually provides substantial offload compared to a static cache. And the reason for this is the amount of work that's involved on the application infrastructure for generating those original responses. For a static cache, the work that it's offloading is really just sort of standard web server work, you know, retrieving a file off disk and delivering that file back to the browser. When it comes to application requests, though, the application server often has to contact databases, execute some form of business logic, do some presentation layer work to actually generate a page, and then deliver that. And that's a substantial amount of computation, far greater than is normally involved in just delivering a simple image. So typically the offloads that you see are, order of magnitude or greater, better than you would see for a static cache.
So I still need a little bit of explanation of the difference. Why can't static caching products cache data that's dynamic?
Well, there are several different challenges that really prevent static caches from actually offloading applications. One of the most common ones is the use of session IDs inside of URLs. A lot of applications have the query parameter values that contain a user's session, which, you know, really is a reference back to some stored state on the application server, which connects that browser session to things like, you know, that user's account, what they're allowed to see, maybe preferences that they have for the current portal. And this session ID is actually copied into every single link on the page. And that's how the application, you know, keeps track of that user as that user navigates around the application. The session ID looks like a very large random number to a static cache, though. And as a result, it effectively defeats the static cache because there's no way the static cache is ever going to see that random number ever again. Additionally, if that session ID is ever reused, it's probably not the same user. It's probably a different user. And as a result, what's going to happen is the static cache is going to inappropriately serve the wrong content to that user. Another challenge is that applications have far too many variations in the pages that they return. Unlike a static object request, where the important aspect of the request is really, you know, just the path to the file and the host name, an application often has a very large number of query parameters that are being passed to it that contain sort of input values. It also might be generating different pages based off of which browser is connecting to it, which language that browser supports, and a very large number of other aspects of the request. And as a result, the static cache is not really able to fulfill because this wide variety of requests means that it's not going to be able to cache everything. It's going to run out of space. And so it gets a very high cache miss ratio. Whereas with a dynamic cache, the ability to handle these variations and only take into account the aspects of the request that are actually important is critical in maintaining that high hit ratio. Finally, static caches really don't have sufficient methods for staying in sync with the application. Typically, static caches are kind of time-based caches. They might cache an image or another object for 5 minutes or a day, and that's really not how applications work. Applications generate content dynamically, and as a result, there isn't a hard and fast rule in terms of the amount of minutes that a response is going to be valid for, because some event could happen that changes the page, and between that event and the duration of the cache time, the cache is going to be serving an invalid response.
Well, I know that we've talked in the past about F5's product, the Web Accelerator. So how can Web Accelerator cache these kinds of dynamic and changing information safely?
Well, what Web Accelerator does is it has several different technologies that allow it to handle both page variations as well as user events and application events. So for handling page variations, the Web Accelerator is able to support rules that allow it to understand exactly what aspects of a request generate different content. And as a result, it doesn't have to look at the user agent value of a request if the type of browser that's issuing the request doesn't actually generate different types of pages. At the same time, though, it knows which aspects of the request to look at, which query parameters matter, which various values of those parameters actually result in the same types of pages. And as a result, it has very high efficiency in terms of only storing one copy of a page instead of storing, one copy per permutation of an incoming request.
So I want to interrupt you, Derek, just for a second, Saxon. You mentioned user events and application events. What are they? And tell me a little bit about them.
Sure. So a user event is an action that's taken by a user that causes data on the application to change. So a good example of this would be on an auction website, for instance, like eBay.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are familiar with eBay. It has listings on it for items that are for sale. And generally, the listing page doesn't change all the time. It changes when a very specific thing happens, and that is a user bids on the item. And when a user bids on the item, all of a sudden that page gets updated. It's got a new time for the last bid. It's got a new current bid price. But all the way up until that bid is issued, it stays the same. And so this is an example of a user event where a user takes some action and a request comes into the application that actually changes the pages that it's going to generate. An application event is slightly different in that the event doesn't actually come from a user. It comes from a back-end system. So this could be integration with a legacy system or with some call center application or various other applications that directly modify values in a database that the web application is front-ending. And the reason this is a different challenge is because caches that sit only in front of the web tier don't see these back-end sources of change. And as a result, there's nothing that they can trigger off of. So in order to handle user events, typically a dynamic cache would use an invalidation trigger kind of a technology, which fires off of an incoming request. Whereas an application event sort of source of change would require a different method.
Can you give me an example of what an invalidation trigger would be?
Sure. So in that previous example, Web Accelerator supports rules where an incoming request can be used to cause the invalidation of related content. So, for instance, when a user bids on item number 3 on the auction site, the accelerator can use that to then invalidate the view listing where the item numbers match, right? So in this case, if someone bids on item number 3, the view listing for item number 3 gets invalidated. And this actually requires some complex logic in the sense that you don't want to build a rule for every single item page because there could be a very large number of those and people can create new item pages at any given point in time. It really requires the ability to copy aspects out of the request and use those for identifying the target objects to invalidate.
So it sounds like those invalidation triggers can deal with the user events fairly well. But what about the application events as we sort of break those two apart?
Sure. So WebExoder supports a different method for application events, and that's the ESI, which stands for Edge Side Includes Invalidation Protocol. This protocol is an XML-based protocol that back-end systems can use to send invalidation messages to the web accelerator. And what this allows is very precise definition of what needs to be invalidated and even when to invalidate it. So in the case of, you know, an integrated application, when the database gets changed, either the database or some other aspect of that application could send an XML message to the web accelerator informing it of exactly what has changed. And this allows the web accelerator to stay in sync with that back-end system.
So do all dynamic caching systems have these capabilities?
Unfortunately, no. A lot of systems that are currently being marketed as dynamic caches really are more akin to static caches with some of these advanced features I've been talking about. For instance, you know, they may have the ability to trigger off of, you know, incoming requests, right? They can support user events, but they don't support an API for programmatic invalidation, which is required for supporting application events. Other systems might have both of those, but they really have no way of handling session IDs. And as a result, they're only able to cache sort of a small subset of dynamic applications. The most common feature that these caches tend to be missing is really the ability to address the content variation issue, the ability to precisely define what aspects of a request make it different from other requests. You know, is the user agent important or not? You know, which query parameters matter? And are there certain values for specific parameters that all result in the same page? And most caches that I've seen tend to be missing that functionality or have really poor interfaces for defining these kinds of relations.
So does F5's web accelerator support any industry standards for dynamic caching?
Absolutely. So the previously mentioned Edge Side Includes protocol would be an example of an industry standard protocol. ESI is an open standard. And actually, the accelerator supports not just the invalidation protocol, but it actually supports the full ESI spec. And that includes the ability to mark up sections of a page that's returned by an application server, defining subsections that are independently cacheable. And this is sort of akin to, you know, breaking up a page into various different iframes, where each sort of subframe is a separate object. But the difference is that while Web Accelerator sees these regions of the page as potentially different objects that can be cached independently, the browser still receives only a single solid page. And so there's no exposure of this type of caching method to the end user. And what this allows is the ability to offload very specific portions of application logic. So for instance, in a portal page where part of the page might be showing, you know, a welcome message to the user, another part might be showing, you know, current weather, another section might have updated company information. What you can do with ESI is actually cache those regions of the page independently and actually invalidate them independently in that as well. And this means that when the weather, you know, information changes, the whole page doesn't have to be regenerated, which would, of course, cause, you know, a large number of queries to back-end databases and applications. Instead, only that weather portion of the page would have to be updated. And as a result, the offload to the back-end is quite substantial.
So I've been speaking today with Saxon Amdahl, who's an architect at F5 Networks. We've been talking about dynamic caching solutions, and we've been covering questions on that. I think we're going to talk again soon about some more ideas about web optimization and ways of moving data around. But it's been great talking with you on the podcast, Saxon. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.